Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. As always, this is such a wonderful time to share with you conversations about topics that are just so important. These are the kinds of conversations that really are empowering for us because we can go into greater depth about many of the issues and the underlying causes that contribute to many of our health challenges. So I so enjoy our time together, and I want to remind everyone, especially for new listeners, to go and take a look over there on my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because there are special reports. I have some new ebooks that are readily and freely available. So it's a great opportunity to just keep expanding your horizons. And also my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, gets lots of posts every day. I just find myself putting more and more information up on my Facebook that I find really empowering and sometimes fun and sometimes just a really good recipe I've come across. So go over and like me at What Women Must Know. So let's talk about the topic that we will be exploring today. Did you know that about 2.4 million Americans have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and more are being diagnosed every day? Among people 65 and older, the rate of Alzheimer's has gone up tenfold in the past two decades and 24-fold among those under 65. But here's an even more disturbing fact. According to a new study, most people diagnosed with Alzheimer's don't even have it. Instead, they have other problems that were missed and could have been addressed if simply looked for. Dementia can have many different causes, and many of them are reversible. Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, author of Real Cause, Real Cure, will explore with us today the underlying causes and the many natural solutions that can help restore our cognitive abilities. And Dr. Teitelbaum has put together a MIND protocol, M-I-N-D protocol, for dementia, and focusing on prevention and treatment on four areas that can cause impairment of cognitive function. One is M for metabolism, I for infections, inflammation, N for nutrition, and D for drugs or prescription drugs we're talking about. His practical approach to restore brain health and preventing memory loss gives hope to families dealing with this devastating problem. Today is all about addressing the conditions that can compromise our cognitive capacities and often don't get understood and certainly rarely addressed. So we're going to be exploring this topic with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, who is a board-certified internist, a nationally known expert in the fields of chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, sleep, and pain. He is also director of the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Practitioners Network and author of numerous books, including The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, the best-selling From Fatigue to Fantastic, Pain-Free 1-2-3, a proven program for eliminating chronic pain now, Three Steps to Happiness Healing Through Joy, the Beat Sugar Addiction Now series, Real Cause, Real Cure, and the popular free iPhone and Android application, Cures A to Z. He is the lead author of four studies on effective treatment for fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, and a study on effective treatment of autism using NAET. Dr. Teitelbaum does frequent media appearances, including Good Morning America, CNN, Fox News Channel, and the Dr. Oz Show, and Oprah and Friends. And he is very fortunate because he lives in Kona, Hawaii. So aloha, Dr. Teitelbaum.
Aloha, Cheryl. Good to be with you again.
It's good to have you back. We did a great show a while back on the whole story of fibromyalgia. You are such a wealth of information, and I so enjoy having you on the show. It's always a great, enlightening conversation. And today we're talking about Alzheimer's because this has become one of the kind of areas that you are putting a lot of time and energy into lately. So I guess I want to start by asking you what has inspired you to take on this cause, so to speak?
Well, Cheryl, one of the things that we're finding is that when you combine the information available across the different healing arts. I'm starting to think that most everything can be effectively treated. It blows me away. When I finished medical school, I had the impression that 95% of what could help people was available through MD-type medicine, and that maybe there's 5% of other quirky stuff that other practitioners who are not MDs, could add in. And I'm thinking now that what MD medicine has to offer is maybe 15 to 20%, maybe, of what can help people. And I think that's optimistic. In fact, one of the things we've done is to put together a practitioner forum. It's a free forum where practitioners of all backgrounds can get together and share information, what's helped them, and learn about how they can help cases they have trouble with. And as I've been looking at this more and more, Alzheimer's is an area that stands out. And there's so many illnesses that are devastating that when you look at multiple different disciplines, are very open to being very able to be treated effectively. But because there's not a lot of profit in these natural treatments, doctors and the public have not heard about how to get well. Alzheimer's is devastating. As you mentioned, it's increased tenfold among people 65 and older, 24-fold in people under 65. Like autism, it is an illness that is skyrocketing. And we had done a study that we published on effective treatment for autism. The same thing. It's a growing area, poorly treated, able to be effectively treated using natural therapies if you use a mix of them. And people need the information. So that's my passion, is helping people with common problems that are poorly treated and poorly understood.
So let's start by first defining Alzheimer's disease. We hear about this every day. We hear about this, kind of explosion of these conditions. And I think of all the things that people are being faced with, Alzheimer's is one of the scariest, losing your mind and your memory,
Yeah, really, just, the kids have finally grown up and left the house, so now you've stopped losing your mind from that, and boom, all of a sudden now you've got either grandparents or yourself, that seem to be having the mind issues. But I want to make it, to broaden it out into dementia in general. It's when people basically start to have cognitive impairments that interfere with their life. And I'm not talking about when you forget where you left the keys. We all do that, and I go in the kitchen and forget why we're there. Alzheimer's is not that. Alzheimer's is when you forget how to use the keys. So for those of you that are wondering, is it just normal changes, that's a helpful distinction. Now, in Alzheimer's, you're seeing the loss of cognitive function because there are inflammatory changes in the brain, basically amyloid deposition and neurofibrillary tangles, where you see a dying off of big portions of the brain. There are many components. Certainly there's a genetic piece to it, but that's just one of many pieces. There are many things going on in the environment, including insulin resistance, nutritional deficiencies. If you look at hormonal changes, for example, thyroid problems, major issue. You'll see that when people have an underactive thyroid, they're much more likely, even if the thyroid is in the normal range, just low normal, they're much more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. Even an overactive thyroid can do it. Low testosterone in men been associated with a marked increase. Folic acid deficiencies. There's so many things that cause the brain to basically be at risk, not just for Alzheimer's, but dementia in general. Blood vessel changes, a lot of things, and these are treatable. But Cheryl, as you noted, there's a study recently that showed on autopsy that half of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease turned out not to have had it. And the problems they had could have been treated. They're just often easy things that are missed.
So why is that? And what is it? I want to go into some of the strategies that you just briefly mentioned. We'll go into more depth with them. But the question I have is, what has gone on to misdiagnose these people? What do we need to know? How are these conditions diagnosed so we don't get put into the wrong category and therefore not addressing the real root cause issues that are showing up as these symptoms. That's a really big concern. It should, you know, that you can be misdiagnosed, and if you had known, you could have been treated appropriately and improved, if not reversed, the condition.
And I'm going to note, too, that even those with Alzheimer's, I believe that a lot of the malfunction is quite reversible. So at the end of the day, what the underlying exact diagnosis, whether they call it dementia or Alzheimer's, is not really important. What you need to know is that outside of having a brain biopsy, which is not recommended, there is no definitive test for Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. There are many tests that are being developed that are suggestive, maybe helpful, but at the end of the day, we don't know. And what people need to realize is that the issue to me, again, is this dementia, and how do you improve cognitive function regardless of the underlying cause? But what happens, again, the average doctor has 6 minutes to do a visit. And that's basically what Medicare will pay for, 4 to 6 minutes. Now, they'll say we'll pay for more, but they don't even pay what the overhead is. So basically, average doctor visit, 4 to 6 minutes. And if you've ever gone to a doctor, and if you have a loved one who had dementia, and you've seen they go in, and you say, well, memory's poor, they say, draw a clock, da-da-da, and they say, here's some Aricept or Namenda. Because, again, what doctors know comes almost exclusively from the drug companies and medical product industry. They pay for our conferences, our journals, and God bless them for those good-looking drug reps that come in and stroke our egos. So outside of that, basically, as the head of a major journal, the old past editor of New England Journal of Medicine, said very simply that basically most of what you call science is really slick advertising masquerading as science, whether it's in the form of journals, conferences. There's a lot more available than the doctor knows.
So I have a question for you. Aricept is one of those drugs that is commonly prescribed for someone who has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. What exactly does it do?
Well, basically, it helps increase the level of a memory molecule called acetylcholine in the brain. And the other medication, Namenda, will decrease the inflammatory glutamate, basically. So it does not improve function in most people. It slows down progression in maybe half of people, and even that's modest. So it's the benefits, it's worth doing. I'm not against people using those medications, but it's a really small piece of what can be done. And you'll find that when you treat with the natural remedies available, so I suspect you've seen this too, that not just do you slow progression, but you'll see people get their minds back.
Yeah.
And well, it's crazy that it's just being missed.
You know, and I know you have so much to share on that, and I just have to make the comment, if people only understood that there are root cause issues that are compromising this function, which is really a symptom of underlying deficiencies, and we'll get into the rest of it, and take action, we can see a tremendous results. We don't have to see these people. Like when I visit my mom in her senior community, you just see so many people whose function is compromised. If they could just get good nutrition, a few supplements, and get off their 7 or 8 or some of their 7 or 8 or 10 medications,
15,
yeah. Oh, my God. So let's talk about some of these strategies that you're working on in your MIND protocol that we need to know about.
Well, just like we have the SHINE protocol for fibromyalgia that helps people get better, and people with dementia of any kind, and including Alzheimer's, MIND, M is metabolic, I would be infections, inflammation, N is nutritional and herbal, and D would be drugs, getting them off of their prescription medications they don't need. So let's take a look at metabolic, and that predominantly includes things that are hormonal. We talked about the research showing that even thyroid abnormalities with thyroid in the normal range, if it's too high or too low, can be associated with a dramatically increased risk of people developing Alzheimer's. Now, a simple thought. why is it that we think that, oh, okay, when they're fine and they have these problems, it will worsen their cognitive function and put them at greater risk? But, gee, if they suddenly get the diagnosis, those problems are not continuing to cause, you know, further malfunction. And it just makes no sense, but it just, medicine often makes no sense. These problems are continuing to impact cognitive function. And very often, especially since half of these people don't even have Alzheimer's, it's the only or main cause of the cognitive function. Cheryl, I want to make a little point with listeners. For those of you who have family members or may have mild cognitive impairment yourself, you'll note that there are days that the person can be very clear. They can be taking care of themselves. They can be functioning. They know the kids' names. And there's other days where they don't know the kids' names and they're just, their brain is gone. And then you may find a week later that they're doing fine again and they know the kids' names and they're taking care of themselves. It's not that the Alzheimer's is coming or going, but there's an important concept. A little 2 to 5% difference in function when you get to that level of problems in an organ, in this case the brain, is the difference between being fine and being totally impaired. So with a kidney, I can take out one kidney of the person's two kidneys and the person will do fine. You can take out maybe 30% to 50% of the function of the other kidney and the person will still be okay. But then you knock out another 5 to 10% and they're on dialysis. So if you go ahead and improve cognitive function, it's just that 2 to 5%, 2 to 10%. That's the difference. So thyroid, adrenal, and in men, testosterone, low testosterone, major trigger for brain malfunction and dementia. So you tune up those three, not based on only the tests. The tests will miss most people who need hormonal support, but by a mix of symptoms and then using the tests in combination with the symptoms and examination.
Can I go back to the thyroid? Because we have an epidemic of hypothyroidism, and, you know, it's a vast majority is the autoimmune form of it called Hashimoto's. And I think this just needs a little more explanation, Jacob. So when you said even if scores look normal, so what would you say is an optimal number for people to target for their thyroid function, for their TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone? What should that be, or should they do a full panel as well?
I think they absolutely need a full panel, but let me give an analogy that Dr. Oz likes that he runs with now. In terms of understanding blood testing, all that the normal range means for a blood test is that you're not in the highest or lowest 2.5% of the population. It's basically called two standard deviations. You take 100 people, the 95 in the middle are the normal range, and the highest and lowest 2.5% are abnormal. That's all it means. And so say I want a normal range for shoe sizes. I take 100 people walking by in the mall or, you know, just at random, and I'd get a normal range of, say, 6 to 13. If there are a couple babies coming by in strollers, I might get a normal range of 1 to 13. A couple big Texans walking by, maybe 3 to 16, you know. But it's, you know, that's what the normal range means, and that's all it means. So when you're asking me what shoe size should we aim for with everybody, I go, no. There is no one-size-fits-all. Mm-hmm. And the same with thyroid testing. The vast majority of people who need thyroid hormone who would benefit from it have normal tests. And it's what do you have to so how do I tell? Well, to take the shoe analogy further, I'll look at you and I'll, you know, if you're 6'3" and 200 pounds, I'm more likely to start with a 12 or, you know, and then I'm going to ask, is the shoe fit? Does it feel too tight or is it loose? And they go, well, it's loose. And I'm going to say, okay, then let's go ahead and go with a smaller size. Or you're going to say it's too tight and I'm going to go bigger. And then when you find a size that fits the best, that's the shoe. And then we do the test to make sure it's not a size 26 or a size 2 or just way off base. The same with thyroid. Tired, achy, weight gain, cold intolerant. These are four common symptoms of low thyroid. If you have two of those, you need a trial of thyroid hormone, preferably bioidentical. If you find you're feeling like you have too much caffeine, anxiety, hyper racing heart, that's a sign that the thyroid is too high. It's like the shoe being too big. So you adjust it or based on the symptoms. And when the person feels like, okay, this is what feels the best, then I check a free T4 blood test. The TSH, how should I say this? I'm going to estimate that it may kill as many as a million people a year, that test, planet-wide. Mm-hmm. And it's scary, but, you know, between 500,000 to a million people a year, mostly women, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask, where would I like the TSH to be? I'd say buried 6 foot deep in the ground. I think the test is a disaster.
Yeah, you cannot use it as a definitive guide to what's going on. You have to bring in the symptoms. You have to assess the person, the whole person. So my next question about the role of the thyroid is, what is it about the thyroid that makes it one of those factors to consider as contributing to dementia or cognitive impairment?
It's basically, the key is that it's energy production. We look at several things. Insulin resistance, for example, is another thing that seems to be involved. Basically, whether you have insulin resistance, when you have low thyroid, when you have adrenal problems, so the blood sugar keeps dropping, in all of those cases, you are having the brain cell getting starved for energy. And when it's starved for energy, it makes it harder not just to function, but to heal itself in the face of inflammation, Alzheimer's changes, and these other issues that can impair neurologic function. So all of these in common have impaired energy metabolism. And you'll see there's many, many other factors that do the same thing.
And this is where there's a lot of interest in the use of coconut oil. I had various guests on previously who talked about the role of coconut oil. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's interesting. I don't know, but basically what you look at, if the brain is starved for energy, because the only energy that it can use most of the time would be glucose. There's one exception, though, and that would be ketones. It's called beta-hydroxybutyrate, would be one common form. And by using coconut oil, or called mixed-chain triglycerides, your body will make a lot of ketones. And if you have insulin resistance or other reasons why sugar can't be used for energy, then you have the ketones that will go in as an alternate source of energy. They're like the cavalry coming when you're on the ropes. And what some people are seeing, you'll see Mary Newport has a very nice book on it. There's a couple of many others. Is that by giving the coconut oil, you are feeding the brain the nutrition that it needs in the face of difficulty making energy from sugar from any of a number of causes. What they're going to be doing, as I mentioned here earlier, Cheryl, we're going to be doing a study on Alzheimer's. And I think we're probably going to include coconut oil as part of the study as a source of the MCT, the mixed chain triglycerides for ketones.
Well, that'll be really interesting because it's a good idea to include it into your diet right now. And there are a lot of benefits for coconut oil. And now we've just added another one, can support optimal energy for the brain.
Yes, and I think that it's very reasonable. And those who have difficulty with Alzheimer's and dementia, I think it's very reasonable to be doing the 7 teaspoons of coconut oil a day and to give that time to work. Now, for any listeners, if you have a family member or you yourself have mild cognitive impairment and you're looking for possible help, we will be starting a study soon in our office. It can be done from anywhere around the world. You will have to have seen a neurologist first. And I want you to get the proper, complete medical evaluation and treatment. And then once they've done what they can do, come on into the study. Give our office a call. The consultation will be free to do the protocol we're going to be talking about today. And we will help design the protocol for those in the study to see if we can get their mind back. And my bet is that they're going to find a lot of you are going to have a really marked improvement in functioning, not just a slowing down of worsening, but an improvement.
Since you brought that up at this point in the show, why don't we just provide a little more information and instructions and distinctions. So who qualifies for this study that you're going to be conducting?
Once you've seen a neurologist, if you have a diagnosis of dementia from any cause or mild cognitive dysfunction, we are looking for people with mild to moderate, not with severe bedridden kind of Alzheimer's. Basically, the mini mental status exam, we want you to have a score of 16 or higher. And again, that'll need to be done by somebody who's trained in doing the examination. And if you've done most, I want this before you've seen a holistic doctor and gone through these other things. So we're looking for people who've had a standard medical treatment. It's okay if you're on Aricept, Namenda, the other medications. But if you're already doing the things we're going to start talking about today, then you're not going to be, you'll be disqualified because we're looking for the effect of these things. And if you've already started them, you won't be able to be in the study. So if you're looking to be in the study, take down the information we're going to talk about today, but we'll be adding this in when you're in the study along with other things. For those of you who aren't interested in being in the study, just go ahead and start doing these things with your holistic health practitioner. You know, there's no reason not to get started in adding in these other treatments as well. But for those that are interested in the study, our office phone number is 410-573-5389. You're going to get a voicemail, leave a message, and my staff will get back to you. But we're looking to have about...
Can you give that number one more time, please?
410-573-5389. And like I said, we're going to aim for about 25 to 30 people. I think 30 will be what we'll enroll in the study. I think it can make a big difference for people. And the main thing is once the study's done, then it'll give the support that other practitioners need to be able to get this information, just like we did with the fibromyalgia, to hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So, and we'll give that number one more time at the end of our conversation. So let's go on to... I think we're going to take a break now because we will return and then we can go on to the rest of your mind program looking at infections and inflammation, nutrition and drugs. So this is a perfect moment to take a little break. And I don't want anyone to go away. This is just incredibly important information. We're talking to Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, who is the author of Real Cause, Real Cure, where he discusses the role of dementia in our lives and how we can get natural solutions. And you are listening to What Women Must Know. I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I will be right back. Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Welcome back to What Women Must Know. We are talking to Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. We're talking about the fact that what may be diagnosed as Alzheimer's could actually be symptom of underlying issues relating to faulty metabolism, hormones, inflammation, infections, nutrition, and drugs that can be addressed, perhaps improved, maybe even totally healed. Anything is possible. So, Jacob, let's go on to the second point in your MIND program, M-I-N-D program, I for infections and inflammation.
Well, if you take a look, you know how if we have a bladder infection or a sinusitis or we have any of a number of infections, we're going to feel kind of foggy those days and kind of fuzzy. Now, we're still able to drive and function. But if you have somebody who's right on the edge and they have these infections, that's enough to really push them over the edge in terms of mental functioning. Now, if you and I have a bladder infection, we're going to have urgency and frequency and burning and going to run to the bathroom. But people with Alzheimer's, many people in their 70s, will have rip-roaring bladder infections on culture, often with a mix of organisms, and no symptoms at all, maybe some incontinence. But they just don't have the other symptoms. And we see that over and over. Now, that doesn't mean, just because they don't have the bladder symptoms, doesn't mean that it's not taking a toll on their brain. It is contributing to their being fuzzy. Sinus infections, if you find that the person is clearing their throat all the time kind of thing, or they have a lot of gas, you know, there's a reason they call them old farts, you know. that comes because there's often the, both of those come from candida overgrowth. And we'll see in people with CFS and fibromyalgia, and in day-to-day, those with sinus problems, postnatal drip, what's called spastic colon, will usually have candida overgrowth. And when you treat them, not just does their energy get better and the pain gets less, but their brains get clearer. And the same is applying here. And you'll see other infections as well, but those are some of the critical ones. And they're not hard to treat. Much of it can be done naturally. And they can make a big difference. For inflammation, so many causes of inflammation, and it's a whole show in itself. Certainly the diet is a major big one. But if you look at anti-inflammatory herbs, one of the best ones is called curcumin. It comes from turmeric. It's what makes Indian food yellow. And it is very, very effective as an anti-inflammatory. The problem is that it's very, very poorly absorbed, so you have to get a lot of it, like eating an Indian diet. But what happens when you do that? If you look at India, in areas that have high curcumin intake, the rate and prevalence of Alzheimer's is one-third that of the United States, 70% lower rates of Alzheimer's disease. You'll see in other areas where they have a lot of coconut oil and the rest, you also have lower rates, not quite to the same degree. But that simple point makes a big difference. There's actually a quite large study, a double-blind placebo-controlled study that has completed enrollment now, that's looking at the role of a special highly absorbed curcumin. And it's called BCM95, or in stores it's called Curamed, C-U-R-A, capital M-E-D. I think it's a premier herbal for helping if somebody has a family history and they want to lower the risk. I have them take one of the high-strength Curamed a day. If they have problems already in place, I'll have them take two a day. But again, you'd have to take 16 tablets of most 95% pure curcumin to get the same effect. Other herbs can be very helpful. We'll talk about that under the end. But when it comes to inflammation, fish oils, and I like a simple form called Vectomega because it's just one a day instead of eight pills a day. I like things that keep things simple for people. Make a big difference in helping inflammation. So, you know, basic things in the diet, decreasing sugar, decreasing white flour, switch from grain-fed meats to grass-fed meats. They taste better, and they decrease inflammation relative to the grain-fed meats. Increase nuts, berries, things along those lines. It can be a very simple thing, but it can make a big difference.
You know, I just want to go back to the infection side of it and the role of candida, which candida overgrowth can have huge consequences to our health, including that foggy brain. And when you think about how many people are prescribed antibiotics and they never recover using probiotics, so by wiping out your gut flora, allowing this overgrowth of candida, which is a resident in our gut, but kind of takes over when you clear cut a rainforest, which is what happens with antibiotics. That must be a huge component for so many people, the candida piece alone.
Well, candida, and let's take that a bit further, because in each generation there seem to be different illnesses that are epidemic. For example, it used to be infections that killed people. There'd be consumption, plague, you know, tuberculosis kind of things, pneumonia. Then we had the antibiotics and anti-infectious things, but we changed the Western diet, and then there's an epidemic of heart disease. Heart attacks used to be very rare. Now they're the number one killer. And that's getting lower. That's kind of moving better. But what we're seeing now coming in is an epidemic of immune and autoimmune diseases. And the question is why? And it's not rocket science. If you take a look at what you've mentioned in terms of the gut flora, There's 10 trillion bacteria in the gut, as many as there are cells in the whole rest of our body. And it used to be that we'd breastfeed, and we would go ahead, and the breast milk would trigger the growth of lactobacillus, of milk bacteria. They would colonize our large intestine, and then we would wean, we would make stomach acid. And from that point on, anything that got in our mouth had to go through this acid bath that pretty much sterilized it. So that culture of bacteria was a very symbiotic, synergistic mix that lived in harmony with our body and was very, very important to our health. Now, fast forward 5,000 years to when penicillin was made and other antibiotics. And as you note, I like your term of clear cutting. It basically knocks out the bacteria and moss. And sometimes it'll recover after a couple times, but after enough times, it's in trouble. And now you also go ahead and get the 140 pounds of sugar per person per year that's dumped in a diet. And what you're doing is favoring the growth of yeast and other unhealthy things. You're making a fermentation tank in your gut. Think of a fermentation tank. You've got the carbohydrate, you've got the yeast culture, and dark, wet, and warm. So if you think of your gut, it's a perfect fermentation tank. So when you're doing one of those 48-ounce Big Burp sodas from the Quickie Mart that has 36 spoons of sugar in it and you're pouring that bad boy down your throat, well, at least eat some hops with it so you can brew your own beer down there, because you're turning your gut into a yeast fermentation tank, and it's nuts. And it causes what's called leaky gut. And then you have poor digestion because enzymes are being destroyed in food processing. We're turning off stomach acids, so proteins get partially digested instead of completely. Then they get leaky gut, so they get in the system. And a partially digested protein, that's the allergy. That's the definition of a food allergy. That's the trigger for food allergy. And food allergies are one of the common things that I suspect is aggravating people's mental function, and it can be one contributing factor to the nutritional and to the Alzheimer's and dementia in general.
So interesting.
Component.
Yeah, Alzheimer's is often now being referred to as type 3 diabetes, and diabetes is now being considered an autoimmune condition. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, we had talked earlier about that when there's insulin resistance. Basically, insulin is the key that opens up the furnace doors and lets sugar get into your cells to be burned for fuel. When that key doesn't work, that's the insulin key, the sugar builds up in the blood and can't get into the cells for fuel, and the cells are starved. That's what type 2 diabetes is. So if you want to call it type 3 diabetes, type 1 is autoimmune disease, type 2 is insulin resistance, so maybe it's a mix of the two. But bottom line is you can bypass those metabolic problems, whether you want to, by whatever name you care to give it, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess it's just bring the message home that our diet and our consumption of refined carbohydrates and so much sugar is certainly a piece of this very big puzzle we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is, my approach is not to make people neurotic about everything in the environment. The TV, God bless those fools on there. It used to be the old days. It was sex sells. You wanted to sell something. You had commercial. You had pretty ladies, handsome guys on it. And for about the last 15 years, it's been fear sells. And now they try to scare people to death about everything to try to get them to keep watching. And it's really unhealthy. So it's not my approach to make people worry about everything in the environment. It's my approach to give people the tools so that they can not only adapt to the current environment, but thrive in it.
All right.
I'm going to give a simple thing. Things that feel good overall are good for you. That's why they feel good. There are things where you can fool the body, like dumping sugar in, and they become addictions. But this American Puritan myth of if it feels good, it's bad for you, is insane. It's incredibly nuts. So the thing, following the advice we give, you're actually going to be having more fun, feeling good, and it's, if why live to be 120 if you take away everything you enjoy? It's like, why bother, Our goal is to have people enjoy their life more and to learn how to keep the pleasures in ways that are healthy.
Okay, so let's go on to N for nutrition.
Mm-hmm. And the American diet, it's a medical term, sucks. It's basically 18% of calories from sugar, 18% from white flour, added fat. Half of the calories have been stripped of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients, with the only nutrient being left in being calories, you know. But the micronutrients are gone. So most Americans are malnourished. You can't strip half the nutrients out of the diet and get enough calories. A lot of people try, and that's why people in this country and the Western world are obese and malnourished in the same person for the first time in human history. We're seeing this population-wide. So people, Cyril, ask, what vitamin or mineral do I need? And the answer is all of them. So, I don't like people taking handfuls of pills all day. And there's a nice, simple vitamin powder. It's called the Energy Revitalization System. People take one drink, and it replaces 35 pills. And they'll have everything that they should be getting in terms of micronutrients from the diet, pretty much, except for essential fatty acids and iron. But it's just a simple thing to do. And then you want to be adding in whole foods, because that's really the key, adding in berries, nuts. When it's convenient, go with whole grains. Increase the fish in your diet. Simple things like that. You know, the old saw, you want to shop around the outside of the store where the refrigerated sections are. And that's where the whole foods are more likely to be. So it's common sense. And again, I'll have them take a fish oil supplement. I mentioned the Vectomega I like because it's just one a day instead of eight. Hunker pills, there's no fish oil burps with it. The vitamin powder. And from a nutritional point of view, most people are going to be covered. For the Alzheimer's, dementia, adding in the 7 teaspoons of coconut oil can be very helpful. Spread through the day, probably the best way, 2 to 3 teaspoons with each meal, for example.
So can we talk about B12?
Oh, God, yes. B12 and iron are two, and folate, are critical nutrients. And the B12 blood level is insane. It's same with the iron, the normal range. The normal range will include, you know, people who are having neurologic problems from B12 deficiency. And this isn't just a holistic thing. I mean, New England Journal of Medicine had a study a long time ago where they realized that, wow, people were getting neuropsychiatric disorders from B12 deficiency, even with B12 levels of 300. And normal is anything over 210. And they're saying, well, maybe the old-time docs are right about the B12 shots. So what came of that study? Totally ignored. Why? It's cheap. There's no money in it. So if the B12 level is under 540, I'm going to be recommending that people get B12 shots if they have the dementia. And the vitamin powder I mentioned, along with the 50 other nutrients, is going to have 500 micrograms of B12. So it's, you know, where the RDA is just a few micrograms a day. So it's pretty much going to cover them. Iron, same thing. If the ferritin level is over 12, the doctor will say it's normal. Well, gee, you know, there's a study showing that that normal range misses about 90% of people with the most severe form of iron deficiency possible, which is basically where they have no iron on the bone marrow on aspiration at all. They couldn't see any. And in those cases, it was about 90% of them, the test said, oh, no problem here. the researchers are saying, are they insane? I mean, they're a little more gracious than that. I'm maybe a little more outspoken. But it's just, you know, when you rely on the blood tests instead of looking at the whole picture, it is insane. So
what should that number be?
It should be 60 or higher. In some cases, I'll aim for over 100, but more is not better because iron is oxidative. Too high is not good either, and that's why there's no iron in the vitamin powder. As you'll see, hemochromatosis can be one of many things that can aggravate things like dementia. Too much iron.
Okay.
So I aim for the ferritin level to be at least 60.
Okay, that's good information.
And the B12 level to be at least 540.
Yeah. Okay, so people should always check their, you know, because a B12 is part of a normal blood workup, and that's a number that people can easily monitor when they get their results back. Over 525, you want it at the higher end, really, right?
I you can't overdose on it. You know, people will say, well, my B12 level was high. It was too high. And I say, really? You mean, it's like, is that like your bank account being too high? Because it's not, you know, in the normal range. Anybody with over $20,000 in the bank is probably outside of the normal range. You know, 95% of the population probably doesn't have that much money in free liquid cash, you know. Does that mean that we should get rid of it, burn it?
No. Yeah.
And, you know, the only way you're going to overdose on B12 is if you fill a bathtub with B12 liquid and you drown yourself in it. But outside of that, it's really hard to hurt yourself. So more is okay in these situations. When you're going with the higher doses, I go with the methylcobalamin or even the hydroxycobalamin forms. In the moderate doses, the cyanocobalamin is okay. But for the shots and the other things, I prefer the other forms. So it's simple things. Simple things make a big difference. The doctors will miss it, but also food allergies as part of the nutritional component. Most food allergy blood tests are an utter waste of time. I mean, it was said they had a study out of Bastyr that looked at, they sent the food allergy panels to the main labs that were being used, and they came back being totally different from person to person. Everybody was allergic to 30 different foods or more, but, you know, in one person it was this 30, and then the same person, another lab said a different 30, and they said that's odd. So they drew 3 tubes of blood from the same people and sent them to the same lab, just wrote different names on them, and they still got totally random results back. So if you're relying on the food allergy blood test, it's a good way to make yourself neurotic. I tell people just take any random result from any person, white out the name, don't bother drawing the blood, just write your name in. There are ways to tell. There's elimination diets, which are difficult, but there's other ways we look for food allergies. If I see a high IgE level, total IgE on the blood test, it's going to suggest that food allergies and other allergies are playing a bigger difference, and I will go after them at that point. So a lot of different things. Then herbals, there's a number of herbs. There's a product called Mental Advantage that's very, very good. And in addition to having some of the curcumin in it, it also will have the sage and a number of other things, the rosemary, that can raise acetylcholine levels. Vitamin D, by the way, has been shown to be helpful as well. So there's a number of different herbal things. Again, that highly absorbed curcumin, the Curamed we talked about before, is a form that I would use because brand totally matters for that. And the vitamin D, any form that you want is fine. And then the Mental Advantage, I would give that to anybody who has the dementia issues or even just people who want to improve their cognitive function in general. So, you know, when you look at that, and it doesn't have to be hard. It can be just 3 pills a day, you know, and one drink. You can get most of the nutritional and herbal support that you need.
Okay. So while we have some time left, we need to talk about the effect of prescribed medications as positive factors for dementia.
Well, the thing is that you'll be amazed. I mean, a lot of people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s in dementia are on 15 different medications. And Cheryl, if you put us on those medications, we'd get pulled over and arrested for driving while intoxicated. And these folks are no different. Yeah. And you'll see all over and over, one of the first things I'm going to do, and what takes so much time, is to see why people are on the medications and do they still need them. And you'll find most of them can be weaned off. You want to have a practitioner you're working with who can guide you with this. And when you wean people off these medications, you'll be amazed how often these so-called dementia goes away.
So which ones do you think are the worst? I would jump in and say I bet statins are on the top of that list.
Statins are, I mean, to me they're a $29 billion a year scam. And now I'm going to say for people with known heart disease, if you've had heart attack or stroke or have angina, the statins can be life-saving. But for the rest of you poor fools who have a doctor who's treating a cholesterol number because the drug companies tell them to and they're trying to convince you to give it to your pets and your hubcaps and put it in the water and everywhere, like I say, it's a $29 billion a year scam. It deletes coenzyme Q10, which is a key energy nutrient. So it's one. But the cholinesterase inhibitors, things that are like medications like antihistamines or medications for urinary incontinence. And I'll note there's a nice simple herb. Instead of those, get something called Sagapro. It's Angelica. The Sagapro is really good for the incontinence. But these medications have been shown in studies to be very, very devastating in terms of increasing the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia symptoms. But really, it can be anything. You know, there's, and when you're doing 15 different things, the drug interactions, it's like, who, you know, who knows? So I, yes, those are the first ones I'm going to aim to get people off of. But I'm going to aim to get them off of anything they don't need.
Right. And that's a long list of things we don't need. And I would think if people can just reduce their medications radically and add the good nutrition and addressing everything you talked about, we would see remarkable recoveries in people.
Yeah, and a lot of the medications we're giving are to treat the side effects of other medications that we're giving unnecessarily.
Yeah, so really what you're saying, this epidemic, like so many of the epidemics, but this in this case, looking at dementia and cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's, which may or may not be properly diagnosed, what you're really saying is this is the outcome of what we are faced with in our 21st century modern world, the exposure to compromised nutritional food sources, dealing with medications, dealing with impaired functions, all of which, and this is I'm sure what your study is going to do, when addressed, can restore function properly again. No matter what the age, or radically improve, which is, you know, when you think how much suffering goes on. I know I have friends and relatives dealing with Alzheimer's, and you know, when you realize so much can be done that if you're willing to take action. So let's go back, and before we come to the end of the show, why don't you give that phone number again, if people are interested in enrolling in the study that you're offering, and the best website, Jacob, people can go to as well.
Yes, so the phone number is 410-573-5389. That's my office number, and Denise can help guide you about the study. We're just starting to launch it now, so she'll have more information in the next couple of days, but it's going to be limited to, like say, the 30 people maximum for the study. And the website for more information, I would go to www.endfatigue.com. So E, and like Nancy, D like David, and then the word fatigue.com for information on health topics, vitality101.com. And if you have an iPhone or an Android, just go ahead and get the free app Cures A Disease. So it's Cures, capital A-Z. It's free. About 2 million people downloaded it. And it'll go health topics from acne to zoster, including Alzheimer's, and how to treat them effectively using the best of natural and standard medications.
I have to do that before. As soon as I hang up, I'm getting onto that that app, because that's phenomenal. You can just have that there and look up any condition and look at what nutritional support will help it. That's just such a brilliant app. So thank you for putting that together. And in the last couple of minutes, is there anything else you would like to wrap this conversation up with?
Yes. Again, when we listen to all these shows, sometimes it's possible to come away with, one, being afraid of our environment, and two, just being neurotic and worried about everything. And what I'm going to say is that even though our environment has challenges, we talk about the nutritional changes, and we talk about 85,000 chemicals and da-da-da-da-da, but we are living, I think, in the best time in human history. And for all the challenges that we have the tools available not only to survive but to thrive in our given environment. And it's not a matter of giving up things that you enjoy. Things that you enjoy are good for you. It's a matter of simple self-education. So in things that are trying to make you afraid of everything, tune those out and take them with a grain of salt. Listen for what's in here that can help me, not what's in here that can make me afraid. So simple things. And for those of you who's getting into the 50s and 60s, there's two mindsets. Mindset number one is getting old is not for sissies, buy nursing home insurance, that kind of nonsense. And mindset number two is that 70 is into 35. And all the difference is giving yourself a bit of a tune-up. You know, if you had a car with 70,000 miles that never had a tune-up, you'd think it was ready to be scrapped, to be clinking and clanking and running lousy. But if you're giving tune-ups and oil changes and the rest, it'll run like a new car. People are no different. But when's the last time somebody went to a doctor for a tune-up where they had something that actually made them feel better, as opposed to just looking to see if you had it yet, it being some expensive treatment? There's reason to be hopeful. There's reason, and every good reason, why people can thrive. And if you have something where the doctor says they can't help you, doesn't mean you can't be helped. It just means they can't help you.
Well, great words of wisdom, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Thank you so much for the wonderful work you're doing, for your passion to empower people, to support them in regaining their health, and to know that 70 is now becoming the new 35. I love that.
It is. Michelle, always a pleasure to be out with you, too.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's just always so enlightening to have you on the show. Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, have a great day and aloha to you.
Aloha, everyone.
And to everyone listening, aloha to you as well. Thank you for joining me for another enlightening conversation on What Women Must Know. I hope you'll be coming back every week. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.